Good morning. It's a Thursday, first of the month.
Welcome to June.
No. Actually, it's not June that's the issue. It's that other thing that follows it, 2023.
Which is?
Oh, I don't know, 1993 would kind of be nice instead.
Yes. Oh, gosh, right. That's true. Time's flying by.
Well, if you don't recognize the golden tones, that's Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel. Good morning, dude.
Good morning, Brian.
You keeping busy?
You know, we are always busy, no matter what. Crime never stops, never sleeps, that's for sure.
Oh, sleep?
Sleep, you
what
kidding
a concept.
Me? I know. We'd love for that to happen, but please go to bed, crime.
Oh, I should have saved this for someone else, but okay. Are you ready for why do we say it?
Sure.
Why do we say someone is bumped off?
Bumped off. Well,
random selection. I just opened to the page.
Yeah.
This is not a setup.
Why do we say that?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure of the origins, but, you know, I'm just assuming that it has to do with throwing someone on the railroad tracks and hitting them head on and bumped off that way. So.
Okay.
That's
during races on the Thames and other rivers of England, or Thames, depending on how you want to say it, boats were launched one at a time. When a crew caught up with a rival and bumped its shell, the latter was disqualified. Popular meets meant heavy gambling. So many a spectator groaned or cheered when a boat was bumped out of the race. London's underworld borrowed from the same sporting world and began to say that a person coming to a violent end had been bumped off.
Hmm.
Should have got this, man.
I should have.
Damn. Famous mystery writer Edgar Wallace picked up on the expression and used it in some of his thrillers. During the Prohibition era, gangsters bumped off so many rivals, you really should have got this, that the boating term from England became fixed in American speech.
Yeah, I mean, I should have got the NASCAR analogy. I don't know about the boating, but, you know, I mean, that is true.
Yeah.
It still is there, but.
Well, a lot of times we say kissed off, too.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Kind of like right now. Oh. Hey, what's this lawsuit that Epic and the others are talking about? Was it Winston, a marijuana grow? Somebody was making application. Do you guys get involved in the commentary on the permitting process at all? Or do you even talk to about that?
From the beginning, when Humboldt County wanted to go into the permitting or started scheduling permitting in both medical and recreational, we were provided those reports. And it was very rare that we actually commented on them. If we had known criminal cases or criminal investigations that we could pinpoint as a reason why a permit shouldn't be approved, then we did that. But
so if you recognize the name, basically?
Yeah, property name, those kind of things. But we've been kind of staying out of that whole thing, the regulatory end of things, you know, when they're trying to get permitted. We just tell them that there shouldn't be any plants in the ground, you shouldn't be selling unless you have both a state and local permit. So, you know, and the whole Epic, I mean, it was the environmental, you know, society, and now it is it's what's now called, was the former Camp, right? So
sure.
Camp is no longer Camp, it's now Epic. So it's this conglomerate of regulatory agencies and law enforcement going out and conducting marijuana investigations.
Wait a minute, you guys are Epic?
So we're not Epic.
Okay.
That is a state-run agency.
No kidding.
Yes.
Boy, is that clarifying
so
for
a
lot of us, huh?
Yeah, as a state-run entity, you know, formerly, you know, known as CAMP, it's just a law enforcement and regulatory agencies that are coming together to take on marijuana and human trafficking and organized crime and throughout the state. So it's a little bit it's great. I'm glad the state's doing this, but the fact is that they're not really coordinating a whole lot with local resources or like embedding their resources with us. Every county pretty much has a marijuana team. And so why is the state creating an additional team when realistically they can, you know, we can be a force multiplier
channel
with us.
You. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how far behind am I on this thing?
I mean,
recently. I think Epic is being Epic.
Yes, I know. Yes. Last year was developed through the state, and you know when there was a problem that's looks like identified by the state, whether that's retail theft or you know marijuana with human trafficking.
Well, no problem in California with people just going into stores and taking things.
Right, but instead of again boosting up local resources, What the state is doing is giving more money to the state law enforcement agencies to combat local issues.
Is there a thought behind that other than just not wanting to release on power and influence?
I have my personal opinions about that. I think one of the things is, realistically, they have control over those resources. Instead of trusting the sheriffs and the police chiefs in these jurisdictions to do their job and
which
to give them resources.
The locals who vote
yes,
for these people.
Yes. You're bringing in outsiders and they are, you know, enforcing the law in various counties. So I don't necessarily agree with that. I feel like the state's trying to do more of a state policing model, and they would rather see local law enforcement go away.
But Oregon doesn't have both. They're the ones with the state police.
They have state police, but they also have county sheriffs. Yeah. And municipal police. So,
interesting.
Yeah. I mean, there needs to be a balance there. Obviously, there's a need for state resources and state law enforcement. But when you talk about local issues and local crime and it's also good if there's a major investigation or a major issue, if we had a ton of things that we could, you know, retail thefts, and then we can say, hey, California Highway Patrol, please come in and assist us with some of the retail theft issues we're taking or, you know, hammering, then they could come in and we could run the operation with their support. That's really what should happen.
So, again, so, when they run out of the store.
Yes. Absolutely.
I can kind of see between the lines on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Oh, boy. It's interesting, I guess. With the cratering of the marijuana industry, are you guys having less issues because there are less grows? Or are you having more issues because they're choosing to go illegal and not have to pay workers' comp and payroll taxes and all these other things that are cost of doing business legally?
It's a good question. We've seen a decline in crime in all the rural areas of Humboldt County. Significantly, homicides and robberies have really declined when it comes to illegal marijuana grows. We still have grows out there. We still have people that are pushing the boundaries and that are growing illegally. And our marijuana enforcement team, our MET team, is out there enforcing those. But we're seeing a lot less, and which is really, really nice.
You know, just for a PR thing, instead of MET, you want to find an extra E.
Yeah.
Just call it the MEAT.
The MEAT team?
No. Not like hanging cold in the locker, but welcoming and talking with.
I like MET.
Yeah,
I'm going to stick with that.
Would.
Jeez.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Billy Hunsel. So, dude, what happened to your jail?
It's a sad, sad subject. Of course you're going to bring that up.
Well,
I know.
You've been ducking me
I know.
For the last three
I know.
Months.
I know. So it's true. Like I could... It is true. Yeah. It is true. So our jail expansion project, which I want to remind our audience, it was approved by the state in 2015, a $20 million jail expansion project, which was supposed to bring a reentry center, a day reporting center for probation, mental health, having all of these out-of-custody programs while people are in custody. It's a step-down program. It's supposed to be 44 additional beds. And the deal was we finally got it out to bid, and it came in $13 million over our budget.
Oh, it's now 13. I thought it was 10.
No, it's 13. So a $20 million initial project, which expanded to about $27 million is what we ended up budgeting for this, came in at $40 million. And
so twice.
Yes. And we didn't have a whole lot of contractors that were bidding it because you know, there's not a lot of contractors up here that could do that project.
Have the capability.
Right. So we had to bring in out of town, subcontractors, trusts, and all that stuff is just very expensive. So we're going back to the drawing board on it, and we believe that we can still stay within the scope of the whole project and downsize it a little bit and maybe not have a in-custody services, but we do out-of-custody services there, and we still get the money and still benefit the community by having this built within budget.
So basically, you only go up half as tall?
Basically, we're going we're not going to have hard beds, so people in custody. So we're not going to have...
Or hammocks?
We're just not going to have people in cells, essentially, you know, while they're in this program. That was the idea, is while they're still in custody, you know, where they're not free to leave, they can do these programs.
Yeah.
Right. And so we're going to focus on programs within our facility. We still have, obviously, beds in our facility. We can shuttle people over, you know, to this area to do in-custody programs. And then the space that we were going to do the jail, you know, expand it to people that are out of custody and provide space. And we talked about a culinary academy, so to speak, so people can learn how to do frontline cook, you know, sous chef type of duties, and then they get out in the community and start performing those things. So
the folks with this new approach that would qualify, is it an earned situation?
Yes, it would be an earned situation where, much like the SWAT program works.
Well, that's what I was thinking. So those folks that, I know you're going to check me off on it, but fine. Kind of like the old HROP when we were going through, or I don't know what they call it now.
Yes.
The careers.
Yes.
Could they intermingle at this with whatever CR is doing, or Humboldt is doing, or Humboldt County Schools is doing on those campuses, and you just have one of your guys standing close and paying attention?
Absolutely. That is the whole design of this facility, is to give people the tools they need to be successful when they're out of custody. That may be job training, that may be substance abuse, that may be anger management, that may be counseling, mental health treatment, whatever they need to be supported outside. We're going to provide those services, you know, to those people there at this facility.
But in order to qualify, they have to have a reservation in the existing facility.
Yes, so they have to be in custody. They have to have been served a sentence, and then once they're done with their sentence, we can push them out into this program. So it'll be coupled with probation, and we're already partnering with College of the Redwoods and also like adult ed. So someone can get their GED, can start programs at the CR, and then continue in them out of custody. So that,
do a lot of the folks take advantage of that?
They take advantage of some of the minor type classes. Like the anger management is something that's required from the courts.
Well, it's not taking advantage, that's executing the plan.
Well, yeah, but they're doing that while they're in custody. And there's other programs that they can also do in custody, which is,
Going after their formal education, is there interest in that, or is that more just an offering that's available?
They are. So there are some people that, you know, no matter what their circumstances, they finally figured it out that they need an education. They need to get their GED, and they're going through that. If they're in custody and we have that opportunity, then some people are taking advantage of that.
If you have to redo the jail, don't you have to resubmit the plans?
We do,
and
Brian.
Doesn't that go right back in the same hamster wheel?
It does. However, I believe that it's going to be a little bit different because when we talk about hard cells and concrete construction and meaning the Title 24 jail standards, it's really, really strict. But if we don't...
But this isn't going to be a tent city.
No, it's not going to be, but we can do wood frame construction, you know, and there's not going to be jail cells, which means, you know, the biggest issue in a jail is making sure there's evacuation routes and smoke evacuation, because we can't necessarily evacuate people from a jail, right? We have to cordon them off.
Yeah, that would be bad form.
It would be. Everyone gets to go, right? And so we have all these materials that don't burn and that kind of stuff. So this is an area where there's going to be people that have the ability to come and go. If there's a fire or there's a cause for an evacuation, everyone can leave. And so it's going to be different standards. That's going to bring the cost down. That's also going to bring the permitting process, you know, way back. And
is there any chance that the state's going to go mea culpa and kick the extra money to you?
No. We've already asked.
I figured you had. It can't be that insightful of an idea.
Right.
I mean, if I came up with it, automatically.
Yes.
That's low-hanging. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30. We'll be back with more from Billy Hansel.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Sheriff Bailey Hansel. So you're not really bored, huh?
We're not bored. We got plenty of stuff going on, for sure. Yes. Well, this is budget time, right?
And so yeah, we've all kind of been led to believe that it's kind of budget time. I'm hearing that what Natalie was in yesterday and said Tuesday, they're going to be... to use your phrase, locking things down.
Yes.
Okay, and a much clearer idea of budget and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Survivable budget?
This year there is. I think that we can make it through this year because there is a surplus, and they have...
You draw down out of the contingency fund.
Yes, so they're going to draw that down and
cover... Which is why
it's
there.
True. And they're going to hope to kind of... reestablish what that baseline is and try and bring in more revenues, explore some cuts.
That's always dangerous.
Right.
Government looking at increasing revenues is like, yeah, there's only one source for that. Stay away from me.
Taxes. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we've heard that there's going to be some attempts like for road.
Right.
And things of that nature, which I don't know.
But so this is the deal, is Measure Z was there because of we had failing infrastructure with roads. We had failing public safety funding and fire. And essentially fire, ambulance, roads and public safety. Those four things that Measure Z was focusing on. And roads has really not received a whole lot of Measure Z funding over the years. They've been, kind of the stepchild in the corner. If there's any leftover, we're going to go ahead and throw scraps to
them. Tom just doesn't have a badge.
But that's
the volunteer fire guys.
Yep.
I mean, I think now everybody understands their situation, where before, what do you mean pie sales don't do it?
Right.
Oh, you need a fire truck.
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
You've got your challenges. Stacy's got her challenges. It's
right.
Like, okay, we get it.
That's right.
And there is the gas tax dollars that at the pump that are going.
Well, we would hope, but...
Except now with all the EVs.
Yeah.
And some of the other stuff that's going on, it hasn't penciled out, I don't think, the way that everybody was anticipating it could.
Well, I still think there's a lot of gas tax money that's not making it back to local, local roads and local projects. And we have all these
processing
failing roads.
Processing and handling, baby.
Yeah, I guess so. The state loves to get their hand in things and then not trickle it down to the counties. And so to have another tax based on roads when people have already paid the Measure Z tax, it's going to be, a hard pill to swallow. But I really
or
want...
Or bumping sales tax, if it comes in. I guess in effect it is a sales tax.
Yeah, it is, right.
9.5%. At some point you just kind of choke and say, I will go out of the county because I can't afford to stay in the county.
Right. Yeah. We don't want to tax our people to death here. And we already feel the pinch of the high housing prices for the moderate to low income that we do get here compared to the rest of the state. Lack of housing and inflation up here. I mean, our guys are, I have two people that just recently left the sheriff's office because they wanted a better life. Somewhere where they can afford a house and
still
have a family.
Still in law enforcement, though.
Still in law enforcement. They love the sheriff's office. They love the county. But when it came down to quality of life and family, You know, they wanted to raise their family in an area where they could afford a house and afford property. You look at the housing around here, and who can afford a house for $500,000 on a deputy salary? And, you know, that's a real hard pill to swallow for some people, and they're going to have to look elsewhere. So I'm really, really working with the county trying to figure out how we can establish some workforce housing. That's really what the county needs to focus on. I was just at a meeting last night talking about housing situations, and I'm happy to hear that the counties and the cities really have a plan as far as dealing with water infrastructure and sewer. So as they expand, they can start getting in more. But PG&E is a different story. PG&E and Fortuna, Rio Dell, and Southern Humboldt, you know, they don't have the hookups available.
Was the services district present?
No.
Oh.
Yeah.
You heard what they did, right?
No, I didn't.
$10,000 surcharge for a hookup.
Oh, that's no
per
bueno.
Meter.
That's no bueno.
About 2 months ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the kind of stuff that's going to stifle development, right? And so what contractor is going to want when you start doing pencil this stuff out? And it's like nothing pencils. Why are you going to do a project? And if you're going to do a project, it's going to be very small. And it's going to be a small footprint to maximize the value.
Which is okay. Yeah, I mean, small houses.
Sure.
1,000, 1,200 instead of a 2,500.
Or, you know, maybe just focus on multifamily, you know, with 800 square foot, you know, apartments, one bedrooms, those kind of things that they can get the max amount of rent or income from.
Would you really want it? Would you really want to have all your guys all living together too?
No, I don't. But that's the reality of what the contractors are building right now because
right.
It doesn't.
No,
pencil,
I was saying
what right?
You had said workforce no. housing for your crew.
I want single family homes. Yeah, I want okay. single family homes in residential areas. You know the Kramer project out in Cutton, perfect example of something that should be pushed through. You know, and I know that we have people that's not in my backyard. It's going to cause all these things, but. If we want Humboldt County to survive in the next 10 to 20 years, we have to expand because we have an aging workforce here. We have all these new things coming in with Cal Poly, with the wind farm, with the fish farm, all these things coming in, and we don't have the support. Where is all the workers going to come? Where are they going to live? St. Joe's, Cal Poly already having a tough time retaining professionals here, and so... We need people that really want to focus on that workforce housing.
I'm just grinning. I don't know if you're sounding like a real estate agent or a developer now.
Well, I'm saying the reality, right?
I mean,
because
it is.
our deputies are happy. They have a great. They have really a really good income right now. They really do. They're happy with their income, but yet still, the income. You know, doesn't equate to buying, and they can't afford to spend 60% of their salary on housing and utilities, and that's really what, you know, it would be. So,
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:42. We'll be back with more from Billy Hansel.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel. Billy, there's an awful lot of talk going on about artificial intelligence. Many folks are claiming that I would benefit from that. How about you guys? Are you looking at some of the ways that might be available to do some of the functions that are being done now? So you can reassign some of those labor hours into some of these other areas that either might make it an easier job for everybody
because mm-hmm.
the load isn't going to get any lighter.
Right.
Or to shift some of the areas so that things are just done a little bit more efficiently.
Yeah, it is emerging technology, and we're, you know, it's something that frankly freaks me out, you know, when it comes to
it's AI a little unsettling for me.
Absolutely. And we have so many confidential databases and those kind of things to allow AI to kind of search and assess data, to me, is a little bit troubling right now. And, you know, it may be something in the future that that it can assess essentially statements and transcripts to...
Or maybe just the retrieval of the base information that then you could look at instead of having somebody have to chase. I mean, it doesn't have to be the total end product of it. I mean, the concept is so novel, I think a lot of us are kind of going, well, this is kind of cool, but I need to think about this for a bit.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. If there's a way that we could, you know, query our databases, you know, by, you know, just simple searches and for them to go through all of our databases, absolutely.
Or report writing.
Report writing.
To simplify that or to categorize that.
Right.
I'm sure you have all the different categories and boxes you're supposed to check and fill in for the state. Well, if it did that automatically.
I mean, those
types of things that aren't perhaps as critical.
But the fact is that, you know, when we write reports and we're doing all these things, an officer has to essentially, you know, sign an affidavit. Like he is, these are his words. This is, you know, what he observed. And so, because he's got to be able to go to court, he's got to be able to testify that, you know, the things that are accurate and correct. And so, but he's got to check all the boxes. He's got to review the thing. So,
but maybe the data pulled out of that report could be done.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah. You know, we're already trying to, you know, work with our existing records management software to try and analyze our data and be able to query our own data to find trends, crime trends. And, you know, we want to go to a smart policing model, really, when we're looking at where the crimes are occurring and, bite your tongue, and where the crimes are occurring, the daytime areas, so we can maximize our resources. When we have less and less deputies out there, do we need to have, you know, three in the Eureka area? Do we need to have three in McKinleyville? Or should we put them, you know, somewhere else? Or should we realign them instead of more in Cutton? You know, maybe we need more in Samoa. So all this stuff based upon crime statistics. So that's something that we're definitely moving towards.
In the old days, was that done with intuition?
Yes, a lot of it was just based upon, you know, anecdotal data as far as, hey, we've been out there quite a bit lately that we should put more people there. But when you have the data now that proves that, it's, you know, it's kind of, it's nice. You know, some people think, oh, we have more stolen vehicles this year than last year. It's like, well, we can actually find that number out, and we can give that accurate information to people if they believe there's an uptick in crime.
I know this is going to sound really tacky, but if somebody says something like that, do you really have to respond?
We don't, but some of the things some of the things we do, we work with a lot of neighborhood watches, and sometimes they bring up issues with us because they believe there's a lot of crime that's occurring in their area. So we have crime mapping now, and so we can do a heat map, essentially, and show where all the crime areas are in the county or in their neighborhood and those kind of things. Say, well, realistically,
that's a button push, right?
Right, it is.
That's the simple stuff. No, I was thinking some of these things where people are asking that, and it's not the public records request stuff.
Right.
It's just other things that, you know, it's easy if somebody says something to go chase it.
Right.
Instead of going, you know, is this really something I need to chase?
Right.
And just, you know, the squeaky wheel, the one individual rather than the community, particularly if you've only got X number of hours a week with your staff to be able to do those functions.
True.
You know, chasing all these wild hares may not necessarily be the best use.
No, we do have a public information officer, and Samantha Cargis, she does a phenomenal job. She combs over all of our social media, and she looks at the news. And so if there's a trending story, or there's things that tend to be misinformation out there that we can correct by putting out something in our social media about crime, about preparing yourself for an emergency or whatever it may be, you know, we're going to push it out there and try to combat some of that misinformation that can be there. But
you heard about the AMs and the car radio, the blink last week, right?
No.
Yeah, Ford on Tuesday last week said, okay, we're going to keep it in.
Oh, okay, good.
So you let Ryan know down at EAS.
Yes.
The argument was a lot of the public safety concerns.
Right.
You know, if cell phone towers go down, most FMs are on towers.
Right.
And the internet stuff goes
exactly.
And that's gone. It's the old AM
In the emergencies, people are going to tune in there. Absolutely. Yeah. We've relied on that locally here. And
so when you said social media, and don't forget.
Radio. Don't forget radio.
Yeah, there you go, bud. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Brian.
See everybody tomorrow.